Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Friends, what a blessing that you are here and we are here. You are going to hear today a conversation with the amazing Dr. Russell Moore. And I can't tell you what this moment means to me. Dr. Moore has meant so much to me and my faith in these last 15 years and beyond. And Dr. Moore, I don't pretend for you to know all the details of my story, but 15 years ago, I had the massive stroke, became extremely disabled, and have really been on a deep, complex, beautiful faith journey ever since. My husband and I have launched a ministry to families with disabilities, and we speak and write and share about Jesus meeting us in just the wreckage. And it's been glorious to look to voices thoughtfully processing their faith and the true teachings of Jesus in the context of our world today. And I just so clearly see you doing that. I am a huge fan.
Well, likewise, and I've been following your ministry for a long time and point people to it all the time. As a matter of fact, just very recently with a family who had a situation with one of their children, a life-changing health incident with one of their children, and found that they didn't know how to relate to their church anymore. And I told them they needed to look into your ministry, and it's been very
helpful. Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. And yes, that you can feel so alienated and just so alone and like you don't belong anywhere when a number of things are in your story, including disability. So yes, thank you for giving them a place to belong. That's what we long to do. As a way of introduction for Dr. Moore, who needs no introduction, but I will. Dr. Moore was born and raised in Biloxi, Mississippi, and he was ordained as minister before taking the academic route as dean of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Most notably, he served as the president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention before resigning after diverging stances on racial reconciliation efforts and the handling of sexual abuse allegations within the convention. Currently, he works as the editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. That is so cool. And he has recently, last July, written a book called Losing Our Religion, An Altar Call for Evangelical America. And it is excellent. Had me weeping. So, Dr. Moore, I would love to just open it up to you to also share a bit of your story, tell us what I missed in your bio, just anything to start us out to give context for the one listener who may not know you.
Well, I'm not sure what you missed there. My wife, Maria, and I live in Nashville. And we have five sons that range from age 22 to age 12 and stair-stepped all. And our oldest two, we adopted from a Russian orphanage when they were a year old.
Cool.
And so they're 22 now, which is hard to believe. But yeah.
Amazing. Well, goodness. I followed your career and insights for a long time now. And have found so much guidance and comfort and courage by the way you've conducted yourself through a lot of controversy and hardship, honestly. You've been a voice I am inspired by. In your book, Losing Our Religion, you say being failed by our idols is actually a grace. Very struck by that.
Yeah.
And in the book, you are referring to the fictional version of America and the church that some of us idealize and want to return to. And for me, this idea of just longing for these idols that we've created has really messed me up, honestly. Mm. I was failed by idols of health, of physical ability, of my typical motherhood. And what I found was by being failed by the idols, I was led to redefine what was worth worshiping, actually. So my question for you is, what idols have failed you and what graces have you experienced in those failures?
Well, one of the idols I think that has failed me the most spectacularly has been that of stability. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and I can see all kinds of ways that that has failed me, where I had an expectation about a certain way that things should be and a certain way that life should go. And then there would be this moment of great uncertainty. So, for instance, very early on, my wife and I went through years and years and years of infertility and miscarriage.
I'm so sorry.
And it wasn't until that process that I started to realize that I had this just sort of checklist approach to what life should look like. So we are married, and then children come along, and then this, and then that. And when children didn't come along, and I found myself really almost, I wouldn't have put it this way, but almost resentful toward God, of saying, why is this the case? That I realized that I had that attitude. And it wasn't until much later that I realized if we hadn't gone through that time the way that we did, I would have been a terrible dad. Because I would have expected, I would have seen my children as just sort of expectations and extensions of my life. And I think I think would have had a picture of them that would see them as something other than gift. Mm. And so that process really identified something that I never would have thought of as idolatry. Right. Because I understood then and now that children are a gift from God, and I would have seen that as a very good desire, and it was. But I was seeing it as something other than gift, right, and as expectation, and that's where I had to be disappointed, and I'm grateful.
Right, that's so fascinating and important, and that distinction of a gift versus an expectation is everything, I would argue. We live and die on our expectations, 100%.
Yeah, and if you think about what idolatry, I mean, one of the things that the Bible speaks about repeatedly about idols is that they're dead. So the prophets will constantly say they have eyes, but they can't see. They have mouths, but they can't talk. And those who honor them become like them. Those who make them and those who honor them become like them. And I think there's something about, I'm teaching through Exodus at my church, and we just came through the golden calf account. And if you look at what's happening in the building of that idol, that golden calf, which Aaron says, behold, the God who brought you up out of Egypt. Is the people wanted something because they said, Moses is gone. We don't know what happened to him. We have to have something stable that we can find worship and identity and so forth. And so they put it into this made up calf, this symbol. And I think that idolatry almost always works that way. We want to say we want to have this stable thing.
Right.
That we can count on and we know is going to be there. And God doesn't operate that way. I mean, the actual presence of God with the people of Israel, the tabernacle, the cloud, the pillar of cloud would appear, and that's when the people knew when to encamp, when to camp, when to pick up and go. They knew that. by the pillar of cloud, but there was no rhythm to it that they could identify. Mm. And so that puts you in a place where there's a kind of uncertainty that's really anxiety provoking. And so I think about it with, I had a friend one time who was, he was laid off from his job, and he was really hard on himself because he said, I'm not discerning what God wants me to do. And after I talked to him for a while, I said, I don't think the problem is that you're not discerning what God wants you to do. I think God doesn't want you to know that right now and wants you in that sort of wilderness place of uncertainty for a little while. Mm. Because I know in my life, those are always, those are the times that drive me crazy.
Of course.
Because I think, oh, I don't know what's going on. And sometimes it seems like, well, God's hidden. I don't know where God is. And later, when you look back, you say, oh, those were the times when God actually was the most
active. Oh, absolutely. I love the notion so much that there's treasure in the darkness, that God gives us mm-hmm. this treasure and we grow so deeply from the worst things that happen to us are the times that we have to cultivate trust in him and we don't have the answer. So I completely, completely agree. And I wanted to ask you, so I'm 41 and have siblings in their 30s and early 30s and have in the last, I'd say 5 years-ish, just this whole deconstruction of the church has really, I mean, you've spoken to it a ton, but it's really impacted my husband and I very deeply. And we've, you know, we have a really unique faith journey in that I grew up in a mainline Presbyterian church and preached the final sermon on the youth Sunday at my church, and then headed to a wonderful Southern Baptist college in Birmingham, Alabama, and learned for the first time that not every tradition would allow me to preach on a Sunday morning. And that began a real journey for me that has ended with a deep, solid faith in Jesus and didn't lead to a deconstruction that unraveled everything, but a little bit of a deconstruction that I was able to pick up the pieces from and cultivate a robust faith that I think is an accurate faith, I hope. My question yeah. for you in this time is, I think people are not leaving the church because they don't agree with what it teaches. I really don't. I think they're leaving the church because the church doesn't seem to believe what it teaches. And you write that the question is not whether we will deconstruct, it's what will we deconstruct. And I think that's such an interesting point. So my question for you is, deconstruction has definitely become a buzzword recently. But you make an attempt to rebrand it a bit in Losing Our Religion. Do you think deconstruction can lead to knowing God more?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know what deconstruction is. And I say that because people use deconstruction in so many different ways.
Sure.
Where for some people, what deconstruction means is I'm abandoning the faith. I don't want to believe the gospel anymore. I don't want to follow Jesus anymore. I want to reject all yes. of that and move out into something else or to move out into nothing. Some people say that when they say deconstruction. Other people, what they mean is, okay, I'm at a place where I've been through something that's causing me to say, wait, what's real and what's not?
Yes.
And so what's the sort of the solid rock that Jesus talks about building your life on? And what are the, sometimes we have a house not built on sand, but built on the solid rock, but we'll have like a deck coming out from it that's built on sand or something like that. Maybe there's a garage over some sand. And those things go. And so for some people, it's a time of saying, okay, well, what was really, really true there? And I think there are a lot of people who have to go through that and a lot of people for whom they had to go through that all along. Where you have to say, okay, my home church made a big deal about that dancing was a sin. I don't think that's true, but does that mean they're wrong about the deity of Christ?
Yes, yes.
You know, people have to go through that all the time and in every era. But in our era, it's especially intense. Because of what you've mentioned, is that people are looking around and seeing a whirl of destruction going on around them and saying, okay, well, wait, where does that leave me? And that's one of the reasons why sometimes when people have, you know, quote unquote, deconstructed, even in the first sense, I often say to people, don't just give up on them and write them off, because sometimes what looks like the first kind of deconstruction really is just the second. It's people who are saying, let me step back and think this through.
I loved how you wrote in your book about this very issue that you have called attention to Jesus's repeated example of refusing to engage in controversy, of which you personally have had your fair share, no doubt. And you encourage us to decide that you value being together more than being proved right. And I love that. And I have experienced how important togetherness and belonging are foundational to my healing and thriving, honestly. I live by the motto, curiosity without assumption. When it comes to engaging with people who are different from me or people who are different than I thought. And my question for you is, what does living peaceably in togetherness and belonging offer us that being right cannot offer us?
Well, you know, whenever we talk about this, it's necessary to say what we are saying and what we're not saying. Because sometimes togetherness and unity, these things are used for awful and destructive kinds of purposes. So whenever there's an institution that is using its power in awful kinds of ways, there will always be someone there saying, well, if you speak to that or identify that, then that means that you're not living peaceably, you're not living in unity.
That is such a good point.
What we have to realize is, okay, what are the different sorts of relationships that we're in? And so there's one way that I would react, for instance, if I were a leader in a church that you know, if my church started teaching there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his prophet, I'm not going to live peaceably with that.
Yes.
We're going to have quite a conversation about that. But that's very different from the way that I relate to my Muslim friend who very much believes that, and I don't. But we can relate to one another and love one another, and we don't have to hate each other over that. And sometimes, a lot of times, because we know where we differ on that, we don't even have to have an ongoing argument about that. Instead, we can be friends the way that friends are friends, and then have those kind of big, deep conversations at big, deep conversational times, but not all the time, because we don't see one another as a project. You know, so I think sometimes you have to say, and that's why a lot of times when you have people who maybe they have parents or they have adult children or with whom they disagree, And they feel like, well, if we have a relationship with one another, that means that I'm endorsing or accepting what it is that you believe. And that's just not the case. And instead, often what I've found to work, and it doesn't work with everybody, but it works sometimes, is if you have people who say, look, and I've had this in my own life where I've had people where I've said, you know, I'm not afraid to argue politics and political idolatry and all of the my views are really well known on that sort of stuff, and I'm more than happy to debate that. But that's not the kind of relationship that I want with you, because I need you as a friend or as a relative or someone else. So can we agree that, because I know where I am and I'm not going to change on that, and you know where you are and you're not going to change on that, can we agree that we'll maintain the relationship and we'll avoid that issue?
That is so good and so right. And I do not do that. And I want to this time around. We got another election coming this year. And goodness, I want to cancel. I'm like, if you really think you're out.
I think sometimes what people, the reason that we don't do that is because if we did that across the board, it would be moral cowardice and it would be
wrong. Yes.
And we would be just accepting all kinds of injustice.
Right. Yes.
And that's not what I'm saying to do. What I'm saying is to say there are going to be those relationships where we say, it's not that we're confused about where one another is on whatever this issue is. That's not what the problem is. And it's not that we're in the process of persuading one another toward some viewpoint. That's not what the process is either. And it's not that our spending our time here at the baby shower fighting about this will one way or the other resolve the
issue. Seriously.
You know,
this is hitting too close to home, Russell, on my words. I've had this happen. You have no idea.
we all have and that's why it's hard to it's hard sometimes to differentiate between those two things, and that's why we need to give grace to ourselves and one another as we
absolutely out. That is so good and so important for me to hear, as I've done literally quite the opposite many a times. It's gone very badly. I've blown up relationships just thinking I'm being the righteous, like I will press on for true Jesus and justice, and everything is multifaceted.
The people who don't agree with me are also the kind of people who say we don't have to be in 100% agreement in order to be friends.
I want to meet some of those good people. Send them my way.
Well, there are a lot of them.
I'm interested.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just teasing. There are a lot of those people. Russell, I have heard you say on podcasts, and I think it was in the book, that you will be the guest speaker at a church, or meeting the guest pastor, and they'll sing "Come Thou Fount," but leave out the Ebenezer, the "Here I Raise My Ebenezer," and it is infuriating to you because it's so important and so tragic that they leave it out. And I likewise am a huge fan of Ebenezers in the Bible and utilizing them in modern day America right now, and having every person be about an Ebenezer in their story. And they've become super important in my story because, goodness, I mean, we are all such unbelievably forgetful people, and our brains need constant visual reminders of God's faithfulness, I believe. So my question for you, Dr. Moore, is how can we balance remembering God's faithfulness without holding it as a template for what we expect for the future?
So we have those moments in our life where we're able to look back, whether in the life of the church broadly, or whether in our individual lives, where we can look back and we can say, here was this moment in which it seemed as though I was all by myself. It seemed as though everything was lost, but God was there and God was faithful to me there. And sometimes I need to remember that to be able to say, God was with me then, he will be with me now. Now, what we also have to say is, God's going to be with me in different ways and in unpredictable kinds of ways. So I don't, I'm not going to go through, you know, think of Amazing Grace, through many dangers, toils, and snares.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to necessarily go through the same dangers, toils, and snares. And we're not always going to say, okay, well, because I went through this in the past, that means that I know exactly how to go through this. That's not what those pillars are for. It's to say, maybe I don't know how this is going to turn out. But what I do know is that the same God who was there then is there now.
Yes.
And one of the things that's helpful to me in all of this is I've spent a lot of time lately thinking about, well, I won't even go down the rabbit trail of the strange quantum physics conversations I've been having so far.
I wouldn't understand anyway, but I'm cool if you want to because you're brilliant and I'm here for it. But I'm like, would be a little lost, I'll be honest.
Well, yeah. But I think with God's relationship to time, it's not just, if we're thinking about the fact that God can't be enclosed in space and time, that he created, he transcends all of that. It's not just that we're saying, well, God was with me when I was 15 going through that crisis, and therefore I know that he will be with me when I'm on my deathbed. It's that he's already there.
Yeah, yeah.
So the same God who is relating to me right now, in one sense, is right now relating to me at 15 and on my deathbed. And so we look at those kinds of pillars as a way of saying, I need to remember that God was able to deliver, and that's who God is. That's a God who really is trustworthy. So the image that's been, I haven't been able to get this image out of my mind, it's kind of been my life verse this year, is in Hebrews 6, with the image of the anchor behind.
Are you kidding? Hebrews 6:19. I know it well. Yeah. I'm kind of a big fan. Our ministry is all about anchors, Russell. I don't know if you know that. So I love what you're saying.
One of my favorite pieces of a hymn is "Though all around my soul give way, he's still my hope and stay. It's my anchor holds within
my
the veil.
My anchor holds within the veil." I love the cornerstone.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's language here. I mean, if you think about the language that Hebrews is using of the tabernacle, that veil over the most holy place. So you can't see back there unless you're the high priest on the appointed day. You can't see back there, but you know there's a mercy seat and you know that the presence of God is there. And there's an anchor that's back there. You can't see it, but it's holding you. I mean, I think that is just, I think there was a moment where I was thinking about that and I thought, you know, this is a mixed metaphor. There's no anchor in the tabernacle. And then I realized, well, that's the point. The mixed metaphor is really making a point here of that kind of security, but it's security in the midst of mystery.
Wow.
Not the kind of security that we're able
to profound. You know, yes.
Figure out and have mastery over.
Wow, I got to really think about that, but you're exactly right. Wow. I would love to end our time because I don't want to take too much of your time. I have like 20 more questions here, but I'm not going to ask all of them. But I have to say this, that you end your beautiful book with this incredible quote from Frederick Buechner. Oh, it really gave me chills. The quote is, a Christian is one who points at Christ and says, I can't prove a thing, but there's something about his eyes and his voice. There's something about the way he carries his head, his hands, the way he carries his cross, the way he carries us. Oh, it's just so, so beautiful. Wow. When it comes to proving the existence of God, we cannot pontificate. We can only point. And my question is, what do you point to when you describe God's realness in your story?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to, if you look at what is happening in the Gospels, where Jesus will say, come follow me, and people just immediately leave their nets, or they get up from the tax collecting booth or wherever they are and just follow him. And often they're not able to explain why at first. He's just saying, come and see. And they come and see. And so often what I will say to people is, look, there are all kinds of reasons why I believe that it's that it makes sense to believe in God, and specifically to believe in the crucified and resurrected Christ. But usually what I want people to do is just read the Gospel of Mark, read the Gospel of John, read one of the Gospels, and see if you don't have a sense that this is not just a literary figure, not just a not just a historical figure, although he is a historical figure, but there's somebody there who is reading you back. And I found that many people, when they actually confront that person of Jesus, that is what starts to make sense of the kinds of longings that we have. So I've been influenced a lot by C.S. Lewis and Walker Percy, who probably didn't know anything about each other. But both of them hit on this sense of there's something about being a human being that we have these longings that cannot be met. And so we're more than just an organism in an environment, as Percy said, that there are these longings. And as Lewis said, those longings actually are signposts.
Right, yes.
They're pointing to something. And so I would just say to someone, listen to those longings and confront the figure of Jesus in the Gospels and see what happens.
And see what happens. I'm with you. The older I get, the more I am 100% with you. What a beautiful conversation, Dr. Moore. Goodness. This has been so, so, so meaningful to my soul. I don't totally have words. You're so wise and so humble and kind. It's glorious. I want to ask you in closing what we ask everybody on the Good Heart Story podcast, which is, what is good in your story? What is hard in your story? And how do you live in the tension of both of those things in your good heart story here on earth?
What's good in my story is Jesus loves me. This I know, for the Bible tells me so.
What a great answer.
What's hard in my story is that I'm really aware of how fragile everything is, and how the things that seem to be stable can be shaken, as Hebrews would say.
Yes, I would agree. Goodness, I would agree.
Yeah. And the way I live in the tension between those two things is Romans 5. Mm. You know, we endure, and the endurance produces character, but the character produces hope, and hope is not for that which is seen. Hope is for that which is not seen. So there's a sense in which the way that is hard to see right now is the point.
And I love that at the end of that Romans 5 passage that hope will not put us to shame.
Will not put us to shame.
Thank you for sharing that. That just blessed my heart so much. Yes, I completely agree. What is good in my story is Jesus loves me, this I know. And what's hard is everything else.
Yeah, that's right.
The rest of it. Well, goodness, this has been a just incredibly helpful, thoughtful conversation. I would deeply love for our listeners to tune in to all your things. And I can plug the Russell Moore podcast and him being a guest on the Good Faith podcast, which I deeply love, and the Christianity Today podcast, The Bulletin. Are you regularly on that? Is that right? It's so good. I love it.
Yeah, every Friday.
With Cosper, is that his name? He's wonderful.
Mike Cosper, I'll listen to it too.
I love it. Yeah. But where else should we keep up with you and you find your book and all the things?
Well, the book, wherever you get books, you can find it there. But you can follow us at ChristianityToday.com, and it'd be great to become a member and come along with us on this.
Oh, yeah, I'm a member. I love the articles, and I think one of the best things Christianity Today has ever done is make you the editor. So I'm a big fan of all that you're doing and all the work. Of being a part of mending the broken world. It's glorious to watch. So keep going, Dr. Moore. I'll keep tuning in.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. God bless you. Thank you for joining us on the Good Heart Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Heart Story Podcast is a production of Good Heart Story, LLC. It is produced by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. We are with you and for you, friends.